don't want to see you coming back in here with fucking justice. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained justice.
Look at anybody going sitting up a pint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Hello and welcome to the Three Men Weave, the Balls and DGA podcast. How are we all doing? We've got a cracking show coming up for you today. Later on, we're going to hear from Mayo stalwart Chris Barrett, Donegal Fire Steve McMiniman, and Kerry's new defensive hope Paul Murphy. But firstly, I'm delighted to welcome back Mick McCarthy. Mick, how are we doing?
Hi, how are you, Mars?
Mark Farrelly is also here.
What did you call Donegal Flyer?
Yeah, I mean, so I was trying to shoehorn each of them into like the most, you know, each team has kind of got an iconic reference. So, like, Kerry's new defensive hope is Paul Murphy because they're constantly looking for a new centre back. So presumably he's going to be that, it looks like, or that's what he's going to tell us later on in the show anyway. Chris Barrett is a stalwart because amazingly he's 33, which I still associate
him with. Jesus,
is he? Can you get over that?
No.
I thought he was a young sprightly lad that sort of burst onto the scene in 2017.
So that fits him into the stalwart bracket.
Yeah, no, and definitely. Then, but veteran, I think, is another one you could go for there.
Yeah, absolutely.
A 33-year-old.
Yeah, although I don't know if anybody would associate him with being a veteran.
True,
give him another year. And then Steve McMinn. Like, where would you put Steve McMinn from Donegal? Because they have...
I wouldn't put him anywhere because I don't really know him. And then that's going to bring us on to a point we're going to talk about later on in the show about underrated players. But where would you have him as a flyer?
I guess so, yeah. Although, I mean, there's four or five that you could fit into that category in that team alone. Probably like Eoghan Gallagher last year. Actually, Eoghan Gallagher is Donegal's flyer, so he's got that category.
Up and comer?
Maybe, yeah. I like that. That's better.
What's his backstory?
See, like, there's Donegal have a breed of these really rangy forwards who have are kind of middle tier players who seem to cover a huge amount of grounds and are very, very athletic. And yet, for some reason, they need Michael Murphy in and around them to.
Oran McNeilish
is another one. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So maybe he's flyer
Chris
number
Thompson.
Three.
Yeah.
Is it the kind of the sort of Paddy Kelly, Paul Kerrigan kind of era of Cork, where the sort of the wing forwards do the work of six men and it frees up everybody else? And or is it more than that?
I think it's more. I think it's a new breed of Gaelic footballer who these guys who are so versatile. Like, they don't have a position.
Yeah.
They're just a flyer. You know, they're just
they're all
right. Okay.
They're,
yeah.
I think they're probably a bit more of a old style stature wise build of a midfielder rather than of a
small little fella.
Person.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
that's true actually, because the players you mentioned, I'm thinking of McNeilish or whatever. He's not a
Dylan or Dermot O'Connor. Jeremy Connor can play midfield, wing forward, in a full forward line, wing back.
But Paul Murphy is another one. Like, Paul Murphy could play wing forward, half back. It's a generation of players who don't necessarily have like a positional shift, but they're just, their assets are such that they can fit in anywhere.
And that's it's a great thing in general, I would say, and it's really good for the game, except for the 2 weeks before the All-Stars when we all have to start arguing about who's a back and who's a forward, and then it's a load of nonsense because it leads to fighting, and we don't like fighting because we don't like negativity.
Wait till we're arguing come this September about whether we put Matty Donnelly or Peter Hart full forward in the All-Star team.
Later on the show, we are going to
number 7 Peter Hart. Yeah.
We are going to preview the finals and also review what happened last weekend. But firstly, there's only one place to start really, lads, and it's going back to last week's podcast, because for those who don't remember, last week in the show, Mark proposed a new three-tier system for the league. And off the back of that, Sligo's midfielder, Niall Murphy, got in touch with us. And to prove that not only does he play the game better than all three of us, but he also understands it better. So he got in touch, and this is his comment, which is about a three-tier system. So he said, what about keeping the four tiers but splitting it into a 1A, B and 2AB system? So you take half the teams from Division 1 and half in Division 2 and split them into a 1A group, take the other half from each of the others and put them in the B group. This will allow Division 2 teams to be playing Division 1 teams and Division 4 teams to play Division 3 teams. Gives all these teams more time playing better teams. Teams improve by playing this better opposition. This was the Division format years ago. There was never any issues back then, but it fell away because of this proposed splitting championships, and we know how that went. Weaker teams were playing higher graded teams week in, week out. The more teams play lesser teams, the better they will develop. Then he said, even in terms of ourselves, it gives the chance of weaker counties a chance to improve. So if you look at what he's saying, to go back to this year's league, Roscommon and Cavan both went down, Monaghan stayed up by a point. Cavan had a minus 19 score difference, so Galway had minus 8 and Monaghan had minus 11. Roscommon and Cavan, if you asked any of us at the start of the year, we would have predicted they were going to go down. Division 2, I think all of us would have said Cork were in a very good chance of going down. Tip ended up going down with them. Meath and Donegal going up, probably the most predictable outcome right there. Laois going up from the other division was most predictable. A lot of people would have said down right there. That actually, it turns out they won't. Carlow, who came up the year before, going right back down, that was expected. Sligo going down. Derry, who went down the year before, going right back up, that was expected. At the very first podcast, we said Leitrim were going to go up. Yeah. Go back to 2018, Cavan and Roscommon both came up, the same teams that went down. Donegal and Kildare went down, Donegal are back up. Down and Louth went down, Laois and Carlow came back up, Carlow went back down. In 2017, Mark, who do you think are the first two teams to come up from Division 1?
Up to Division 1 2017 were Kildare and who's come up the year before? Tyrone.
And no. who went down?
Cavan and Roscommon.
Cavan and Roscommon. came up, was Division there, go to Division 3. In 2018, the team that relegated from Division 2 were Louth. Who do you think got promoted out of Division 3 in 2017?
Louth.
Go back the year before that, Tipperary, who were in Division 2 this year, were also Tipperary, were the team that relegated, went up from Division 3 that year. So they had 1 year there before going back down. And the point, I think what Niall is getting on and what we were talking about is, there is a gap, but I'm sick of this gap. Like, I'm sick of watching the Leinster Championship. There's nothing I'm looking forward to less than the Leinster Championship this year because of this gap. So if there was a system that you could get those teams to kick on more, like a Meath, we can talk about this in hindsight, but Meath will probably go straight back down next year.
Yeah.
And if they had maybe more of a chance to expose themselves to that level and learn kind of intricacies about that, then maybe it would adapt and the whole thing would get better.
100%. That was my idea, the three-tier system, which I've gone off, by the way. And to be fair, Mick, you came in yesterday.
I did.
And taught me out of it.
Boxing gloves on.
Yeah.
Ready to go. Listed to the pod on the way into work.
And the reason you said was that it was that come the end of the league, you're going to have matches where there are teams that if it's a 10-team or 11-team league, where there are teams in fourth, fifth with nothing to play for, and it's just going to be dead rubbers.
Yeah.
Which is
I think that the stat this week was that 26 of the or 28 maybe of the 32 teams had something to play for this weekend. And when you consider there's no relegation in Division 4, that's a phenomenal stat.
And but even
like it's a sign of a very good system for all. And I know we always want to tweak these things and make them a little bit better. And that's a good thing. We should always be looking for better. But it is also, we never smell the roses, you know, and the Football League has been phenomenal for a few years now. And we want to make it more important. And everybody's advocating for the league to become a bigger part of the calendar and a more important part. It's like, that's because it's working.
Yeah. You know? But I think a lot of the reason the league is great is because it's competitive. Like, I do think there's an element of it that is, I think it's great, but just don't think it's perfect.
Well,
it's really, really competitive, which is brilliant, but it's also predictable.
I'm fully behind my new proposal, which was, I suggested right at the very end last week, but we didn't have time to talk about it. I'm fully behind the home and away matches and keeping the four divisions the same.
And just to go back to Niall Murphy, so looking at this from Sligo's perspective, Niall is talking about a team that are going straight back down to Division 3, but is there as much of a perceived gap as we're talking about? So going back to the idea of somebody like Cavan, who their points scoring difference wasn't that different. Monaghan only stayed up by a point. Carlow are going down with 5 points and they've got a very good score difference as well. This it all points to there being slight brackets within that those teams maybe would benefit from further exposure.
Yeah.
And like what you're talking about is a team like Cavan understanding that, you know, if you're up against Kerry, this panicking and fouling, giving somebody like Sean O'Shea this opportunity, that's throwing away a game. So maybe you play like a Brian Howard type player in your half-forward line who fouls out there like a closed fist just to slow down them progressing. But you only learn that by exposing yourself.
Or kicking
the
ball off a tee in the last second.
which brings it full circle because it happened against Sligo. so for those that didn't see
if anybody hasn't seen yet.
Yeah, it's up on site on Bosley that Offaly were, to relegate Carlow by the way, Offaly scored the last minute point, went up by a point and the keeper put down the ball to kick it out. Only to have it booted off the stage.
Like a good 5 miles into the stand.
That's the best thing about it. It wasn't like an accidental, I'm running back out to my position. I accidentally collided with the ball. It was the most premeditated, cynical thing you could do.
The hardest he kicked the ball all day.
Fair to say, that was a hell of a shot. But I was also thinking that Carlow get relegated off the fact that I think it wasn't against Westmeath at the very end that they had a stonewall free that wasn't given. Straight in front of the posts.
Yeah,
the clip
went out on Twitter. Yeah.
And that's another thing. It's just a tiny decision like that, you're gone down.
Yeah.
Roscommon, if Fulton Harney hadn't react to Niall Morgan for that free in that they had that the referee threw it up afterwards, Roscommon would have stayed up because they would have beat Monaghan on the head-to-head.
And just to kind of round this up, in an ideal world, I think what a league looks like is, we all love the league. We love if the year was switched and this thing, but the league in itself is still not perfect because you still have this perceived gap, like in Division 1 where you've got 6 great teams and 2 who are constantly getting relegated. And eventually that gets born. It does.
But lads, it has, like, it Roscommon and Cavan went down this year. Mark's after just pointing out about the fact that it could have went a different way. He's not going to bring it to the podcast, luckily for the rest of us, but he has four or five conspiracy theories that has Cavan could have stayed up and even beat Dublin. Apparently, 1-3 of Dublin's scores were illegitimate in the game. He's not going
1-2 or
anyway.
Score should have been given.
Right. Look, what I'm saying is, though, they had a chance. And the whole point of Mark's argument is to say that, you know, maybe if they were given a further chance, they could live and survive and stuff. But ultimately, someone has to go down. And if there is a gap there, it's a lot more the fault of just the fact that there happens to be a sixth team top tier, or probably a one team top tier and a five team second tier, then there is, it's just a coincidence that there isn't eight teams. You know, that doesn't last forever either. We're talking about a few years here. And we do need to have a system that doesn't just look for we're not going to talk about it right now, but the biggest problem with the hurling league forever has been, and it's been diluted by the fact that they're always trying to please everybody.
Yeah.
And when I remember when Cork dropped down to 1B a few years ago, they lost the relegation playoff, and like, it didn't happen. But the assumption in the media was that they'd change the rules because they couldn't have Cork playing in the second tier. You know, and people got more used to teams playing in 1B and winning all Ireland's from them and there and all. But at the start, that was like, and they didn't do it. Now they have, and it's completely diluted, and I don't really know the point of it. And just going back to Niall's idea, and I really like so many aspects of the idea, but just off the top of my head, I kind of put together two groups there based on where I think people, again, without them in front of me, where they finished in the leagues this year. And you'd have one group of Kerry, Galway, Monaghan, Cavan, Mead, Armagh, Clare, Cork. And you'd have another one of Mayo, Dublin, Tyrone, Roscommon, Donegal, Fermanagh, Kildare, Tipperary.
Mm-hmm.
A few of them are wrong, and don't take it in. Don't worry about it. It's kind of like that. Are they competitive enough? Are those teams, are Galway, are Mayo, are Dublin, and it shouldn't all be about them, I understand. Are they competitive enough now compared to what they have? And also then, if you look at Clare or Tipperary, do they have enough of a chance?
Yeah, I don't.
You know, I think they're gone in that scenario, whereas they can compete and they can live with, maybe Mead are too good for Clare, but they can kind of compete with everybody else in the division, and they might lose every other game, but they're in there with a shout, and ultimately they've survived now for the, they're going to be playing Division 2 for 3 years in a row, which would have been unthinkable for Clare 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and it's an amazing achievement, and they've fought themselves to that level. They can't really go higher.
And there's also like a progress thing that you can have. Like Laois have, the way John Sugru has improved them, have every chance of being in the promotion hunt next year.
Yeah.
Going up into Division 2. So they've gone from Division 4 to Division 3 to Division 2.
To 1, which Westmead did a few years ago as well. Yeah. So it can't be that close the book either. You know, Westmead did that like not 6 years ago, like, and then went back down to Division 4.
The thing is, if it's just two divisions, really, you're just going up between the two of them. And it's like, oh, we've got to get a ship promoted. Like, you don't have the same enthusiasm. Like, Leitrim, it'll be a whole new experience next year for them in Division 3. And they'd be looking possibly, you know, to maybe stay in it and then go up another division. Whereas if they went up to the division, if they got promoted from Division 2B as it was, or 2A this year, they'd definitely be going straight back down for Division 1A or B.
But just the final counterpoint on this, right now the system weighted in favour of kind of the top bracket teams and them kicking on. And for the sake of developing an entire game, and we're, again, go back to this is the idea we would propose this to be your championship. If this was your league structure, you could get a system where, like, for example, if we had done this year and you gave Mead an extra chance as opposed to getting relegated straight away next year, you give Mead an extra chance to, you know, expose themselves against those teams. That would stand to them to finally maybe compete against Dublin in Leinster, which instead of Cheshire, now we have one team who are going to cakewalk through. So right now, the league is in a benefit to Dublin right now because they're exposing themselves to really high quality teams.
But I'd argue though that if they're not good enough to stay up, then they're not going to have it. Like I understand it is chicken egg. You do need the reps.
Yeah.
You need to be able to play these teams, and I completely get that point. But at the same time, I think we're getting a little bit grounded in the fact that there's been a bit of a statistical anomaly in the last few years where there does happen to be a top six. And as we pointed out, that's what I'm saying. It kind of works against the argument to say that both Cavan and Roscommon did enough that they could have stayed up this year. One of them could have stayed up. It was never going to be both. Like, they didn't in the end. But that's not to say that Mead are coming straight back down next year. Like, it isn't. You know, and we don't know what will happen in 12 months. Never mind the turnover in inter-county teams at the moment. Like, you know, it'll be a different year in 2020. Like,
Anyway, can we talk about...
Why do you think it is? Sorry, I just...
I think the league is more predictable than... I think we all get caught up in the idea because the championship is so bad that the league is an amazing alternative. And I think it's good, but I don't think it's as great as people necessarily think it is because it's too predictable. Like, just to go back again to this year...
But it's going to be more predictable if you just add more teams to it. It's going to make no odds.
Like. I'm not talking about it in terms of a spectacle. I'm talking about trying to improve the standard of those teams. Like, it might not take a year or 2 years, but if they got prolonged opportunities... Say, like, in a three-tier system, for example, one of Meath, Carlow, or Roscommon would get a chance to stay up and get a chance a second year to play at that level. And they inevitably, by exposing themselves to that again, I think they would kick on, and that would make... more competitive, as opposed to having like a top tier, like a six.
But then eventually. when we have 12 team, or you know, that we have 10 team divisions, right? What about the, you know, then it's whoever comes up from that division is going down every year. You know what I mean? We're going to have the same problem. And what's the benefit of
it? I don't think they would, because I think there's enough teams there that they. So it's like, say for example, if a Meath were to come up next year, like I'm not writing off Meath at all. I'm just saying I think they're
I'm also laughing at the fact that
last week
I was arguing to Morris telling me that the two teams that come up in a 10 team division one would go straight back down, and I was trying to defend it, and now Mick's arguing that the two teams in a 10 team league would go straight back down, and Morris is trying to defend it.
Well, I'm not arguing the specifics of any point. I'm saying that no matter what system you have, you could end up in this situation. Yeah. So say let's take a random hypothetical and say that, Sligo and Roscommon, right? Like they're in two different levels, but say they weren't. Say they were the two teams left behind in a new system and they're in Division 3, or whatever. Like they come up in the new system, whoever goes down, I don't know. Who's to say they're not going to be at a gap? You know, we ultimately have to have promotion and relegation. People are just going to be left. Like it's just a numerical... random collection as to where the tiers stop, but we don't know until they happen. So there's no way of that. Right now we say let's give me the second chance, but then what about the team that comes up into the 10 team division? Are they going to get a second chance as well?
No, but I think the idea is that you would give by maybe broadening the base, you would, instead of having six great teams and, you know, whatever it is, 26 rest, you might get to a stage where you could have seven great teams and eventually might kick on to eight or nine, and it would make the, like, you're just talking about trying to expand the base and make it slightly more competitive.
I agree. I just don't necessarily know that this is the answer to doing that.
Yeah, and neither do I. But we're
just away fixtures in a four division league. That's the answer.
We should put a call. We should put a call out. So Niall's got in touch with a really great suggestion. If anybody else thinks they can better that, or even if it's actually necessary, they should get in touch at the Gaffer at Boz.ie, or you can get us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Boz.ie.
Niall, I disagree with everything you stand for, but I respect your right to say it.
We'll get Niall on the show to expand on that, because it's a team. I know his teammate, Niall Ewing, has talked about he doesn't want a second tier as well. So it's something that I think is worth maybe trashing out more.
Darren
so
O'Sullivan was also on Twitter this week talking about it. He was talking about the idea of... playing it in the summer. Imagine those matches that were so brilliant last month in the middle of the summer. When I say I was...
No, Morris just said it was all shite, so I don't know.
Also, when I say he was talking about it, I mentioned it, and he just sort of agreed with a winky face. He didn't actually bring it up.
This weekend, Meath are playing Donegal. The other game is going to be Louder Westmeath. That's to decide who plays in the Division 3 final. In Division 4, obviously, you've got Derry and Leitrim. That's a double header with the Division 2 final. On Sunday then, Kerry are playing Mayo, which this is actually a cracking day. I'm going into this myself. Kerry are playing Mayo in the main game, which is 4 o'clock. Before that, Limerick playing Waterford in the Hurling.
That should be in the main game.
And then, it's the last game.
The latter game, yeah.
At 4.
Equal billing.
Limerick and Waterford are playing at 2, and Kilkenny are playing Galway in the Camogie at 12. It's a shame that there's not three Galway teams playing there, but we can't all have it that way.
Go and beat Waterford, don't you? Lost them twice now.
Eddie Brennan was not happy with what he saw at the weekend, and I think it's worth kind of trashing out, because if I was to make a prediction, I think this year's Hurling Championship is going to be a disappointment compared to last year, and this is why. So just to clarify what happened here, Dublin were playing Limerick at the weekend, and Dublin played with the Limerick system, for want of a better phrase, where you drop out everybody bar maybe two or inside three and kind of have this savage, hard-working half-forward line playing very deep. And he tweeted in response to this, "God, this is ugly hurling. As near as it gets to where all defenders, all out defending, which has destroyed Gaelic football. Dublin coming with a plan to saturate between the 45s and frustrate Limerick." He later called it rugby with sticks. So basically what happened was that you had players like Sutcliffe, Boland, Eamon Dillon kind of coming out and working like savage hard around the 45, which is something Limerick do as well, by the way. But the problem is, Christy O'Connor had an amazing column on this on the RTE website where he kind of talked about the idea. The problem with that, say, Limerick did it to Galway, but Galway tried to play with a full four line. It makes for a really entertaining game. But if you try and mirror that, like what happened used to happen in 2016 with the sweeper system, it weakens the... Not weakens, that's the wrong phurse, but it dilutes maybe the quality of hurling and it becomes a bit more kind of congested and savage and kind of brutal and the whole thing kind of comes stop-start.
And you have other teams. Clare, I think Terry McGrath did a piece on Sunday Game a couple of weekends ago when Clare played Limerick about how showing how they played the exact same system and that it was just whoever came out with the ball.
And Galway are doing it too, bringing up, I mean, Whelan and Joe Canning coming back into their own half and working savage hard. But look, it leads to a huge increase in turnovers, but a lot less, like the scoring statistics have gone down in this year's league. Now, that's also to do with the fact that there's no relegation, and maybe that's to do with that. So you can't...
A lot of games seem to... I know it hasn't been like the worst winter of all time, but a lot of hurling especially seems to have been played in absolutely diabolical conditions this over the course of the league as
well. Yeah, although I do think there is... I take that point, but I still think there's a trend towards that this is going to be a tactic now that you're going to try and... Because you're trying to match, especially when the All-Ireland champions laid it out, and that'll set something up. On this team, by the way... Down, who looked like a shoo-in to get promotion and ended up not. Conor Harrison came on after the game and said one of their main flaws was that they didn't cope with the wind. So playing with the wind. So he spoke yesterday and said there was a gale force wind and we only contributed 3 points with it to our backs. You need to be smart with the ball. A lot of them were pot shots we were shooting and not even looking at the goalpost, relying on the wind to take the ball over the bar. Again, that's just coming down to not really using what's at your disposal. I saw Armagh do this against Meads earlier in the league as well. It's kind of funny that anyone who plays in Ireland wouldn't be able to account for the wind, but I guess it just comes down to, you know, shot selection, as he said there.
There's also the thing of which you do in the first half, where you play with the wind or against the wind in the first or second half. There's always like nearly an onus on you in the second half. You're going out with a sort of, you're straight into panic mode and you're going like, right, we have the wind now and we need to make it up. I always find you're better off going against the wind in the first, or sorry, with the wind in the first.
Yeah,
half.
Definitely. Run up the scoreboard, yeah.
Yeah, but and also just that even if it's level, you don't have that pressure of going out in the second half that you're expected now. You know, you're kind of going, right, well, we're against the wind, we're going to have to work hard here to get something, where it's like, no, we're with the wind, we have to capitalize on this now straight away, and you start shooting from everywhere.
The wind is a psychological kind of like block, I find, on GA especially. It's one of those, it's the only sport in the world that you'll hear, like, you know, you'd be 5 points up. You know, maybe your team would be 5 points up, listen to the radio on the COCOM and go, oh, this is a 10-point wind, Marty. You know? And it's like, how did you quantify that? Like, you know, out of his abacus, figuring out that it's a 10-point wind. And, you know, they're not always wrong either, but I think a lot of it comes down to psychology. You just have to play. It's like what he's saying there. You have to play smart. You have to understand what way to play in the wind. Instead of this worry that you have to have the lead or not or whatever, you just play a different way and you like treat each score as it comes rather than this nonsense about building up a lead.
Especially this time of the year, because it's so rare that the wind, like we've seen a thing in the GA that we assume that the wind doesn't have multi-directions. It can't blow, there's no northeasterly, there's no northwesterly. It blows into the town end or it blows into the far end. Like, often the wind can be blowing across the pitch or into the corner or swirling.
That's so funny. How many times have you found yourself in a terrace watching a match and kind of like looking around and goes, who has the wind, lads? And you're trying to figure it out. You're looking at the flags from different directions. And it never occurs to you that maybe neither team has an advantage. It's just that you can't figure it out, even though you're actually in the wind.
Also, I was trying to find, speaking of winds, the wind on Sunday was atrocious. We had a challenge match Sunday morning, and you'd start a ball out 6 yards out one side of the post, and it had end up going out the far corner flag. And Kevin McStay had a real go at goalkeepers throughout the Sunday or throughout Allianz League Sunday, and some of his criticism I thought was completely fair. I actually thought in general it was completely fair, apart from the fact that he just didn't really take into account that Niall Morgan and Rory Lavelle had to contest with a terrible breeze in the Tyrone-Galway game. And he was talking about showing all their kickouts going wrong. And to be fair, you have to give them a little bit of leeway there.
And it's also, that's something that should influence decision-making. Like, instead of going back to down, instead of, you know, trying to kick a pot shot over from 65 yards, just launch it up in the air and let it bounce in the or drop towards the square, because nobody can predict what's going to happen in there. It's kind of, it makes the ball all that more predictable when you're kind of, it's breaking there.
Yeah, the other thing just on Kevin McStay, I wanted to compliment him on on his use of the phrase boondocks at the weekend. He said Meath fans were in the boondocks for recent years, which I had to look up. And apparently it's something to do with American country music and being up in the mountains. Stranded. So there you go. Little fun fact. What's that coming over the hill? Is it a Tony Johnston? Is it a Tony Johnston? What's that coming over the hill? Is it Tony Johnston? Is it Tony Johnston?
Right, Chris Barrett, lads. Mayo are in the league final this weekend. It's been a pretty successful league for Mayo, actually. They've kind of unearthed a load of potential players who could actually really rival their championship. And on that team, PJ asked him about this idea of whether or not they're an older team, or this maybe there's a perception of them being an older team because the likes of Aidan O'Shea or Killian O'Connor have been around for so long. Even though, you know, they're not actually that old. Chris Barrett is that old. But
yeah. Conroy, Lee Keegan.
Elsewhere.
Keith Higgins.
So I guess the counterpoint to that is like the likes of Ruan or John McDonough, or who've all kind of, you know, bursted onto the scene. Might not be the right word because they were kind of hinting around there in years past. But that has just added an extra degree of competitiveness, or certainly Chris thinks so anyway.
There's a couple of guys, or there's five or six guys that have really put their hands up there. And it shows in training and in trying to get into 26. I think I just mentioned to you earlier, they're getting into the squad now is nearly as big as getting into a team. You know, back in the day, maybe you were looking for the first 15, whereas now I think it's the most competitive squad that I've ever been involved in. I mean, there's a real kind of, am I in the 26 or not now, rather than in the first 15, and that's probably to do with a lot of the younger lads really putting their hand up this springtime. You know, there's a couple of, you know, Kaleem is out, Shane has been out, so there's a chance there for everyone to get involved and really pushing. You know, I think people sometimes, there's a perception out there that we're an older team, but I mean, we look at the likes of, you know, Jermot and Paddy and Stephen Cohen, who people might think they've been around for years, but those guys are only 22, 23, so they've been kind of coming the last year. So I guess it's the newer batch this year. You know, it's Michael Blunkett and Fionn McDonough. Fergal Boland has been doing really well. You know, Conor Diskin, Conor Loftus, you know, my own club mate, so there is really a good crop of young fellas coming up. But it's great to see, and they really are pushing us.
Isn't that fascinating? That's talking about the expanding, you know, your base of players. That it's not anymore. It's about how competitive is the 15 players after reference. How competitive is the 26? Because I suppose nowadays, when you know you get subs coming on in the first half and things like that, it doesn't necessarily matter. But having a 15 isn't good enough anymore.
Oh no, not a hope. Also, I want to commend Mayo, and they've got Coen brothers in, who, you know, great filmmakers, but now you've also got two Coens playing for Mayo. Like, there's players are showing up in Allianz League Sunday that, I'm like, where's this lad come from? And also, the whole Mayo needing a marquee forward, and then Coen's there at the weekend scoring a point from the sideline. And I was like, oh, that's Stephen Cohen's really sure off, and it's not even Stephen at all.
It's the other one, yeah.
It's the other fella.
It's a nice alternative, isn't it?
And yet we mentioned the older players either, and I forgot even to say Andy Moran. You know, we're talking about, like, you know, the oldest of them all. Like, they actually do have an awful lot of kind of, you know, weather beaten players in their 30s or close to it. But then they're complementing that with, and that comes into the 26 man thing, doesn't it? Because, you know, you're talking about there's only so much space in a 15, but if you're suddenly thinking of that as 26 rather than 15, there's room for both. You know, that's like, it's this new generation coming through, plus those, you don't have to send, you know, Colin Boyle, off you go, you know, time's up for you. You know, you can still have a role for him there.
Yeah, like, exactly, know? Yeah. The man who's going to be trying to stop that Mayo new look attack is Paul Murphy, who looks like he's going to be Kerry's new centre back. Problematic situation for years, realistically, that Fitzmaurice never really seemed to get right. Just on the theme of defensive structures, I thought Paul was really interested in talking about why he prefers to play centre back, which we can hear about now.
So far, things have gone quite well. From a defensive point of view, we're happy enough. We could probably tighten things up back there a little bit better, but generally quite happy with it at the moment. I've always said I'm happy enough to play wherever, but it'd probably be more natural as a halfback. Underage, I would have played nearly all my football as a halfback. Quite late in the day that I played a bit up front. Probably centre back. I think when things are going well for you, centre back is the best position on the field, but you know, when there's lads running at you in twos and threes, it's probably not as comfortable. Yeah, if you were to push me, probably centre back or wing back would be my favourite position.
Why would you say it's the best position on the field when it's going well?
Because you can influence the game a lot from there. A lot can go through you. You can cut out ball from there. You know, you can, in a wing position, particularly wing forward, you can put in a huge shift, I found. and it just won't, the pot might not come your way. And you can spend a lot of time chasing it back to field. It can be frustrating, whereas I think centre back, a lot of the play will be coming close to you anyway. And so you can get involved with that.
This year, fifth year in the Kerry panel now, I think?
Sixth year, okay.
You must feel like you become kind of a leader among that group now, because there are a lot of players younger than you.
Yeah, sure. You'd hope as you progress, you become a leader, and you know you can influence or encourage the younger lads coming through, and maybe they could learn something from you. And certainly in the higher half of the age groups, we'll say I'm above average. The age group has come down significantly in the last 2 or 3 years. Hopefully I can give a bit of leadership and show the lads a bit of guidance.
That was great. Defensive structures is something that has been Kerry's biggest problem right throughout the league. Throughout the last kind of couple of seasons. They just can't seem to get it right. Aidan O'Rourke was pretty critical of them, even after this league. He kind of made a comment, he wrote in his column that there's no like unified will to defend as a team. Something that Tomás O'Shea really disagreed with and called a lazy comment on the Sunday game. Just to go back to what Paul was saying there, I think he hit the nail on the head there. Like, centre-back is a great position when things are going right, but it's the worst position in the world when you're being overrun and you've got people running down your throat and there's not really much you can do other than try and steamroll them. And
hold
that's why
the centre.
Yeah, but I mean, and how do you do it then?
Yeah.
Yeah, also Paul Murphy, like, one of his biggest, when he burst onto the scene with won the All-Ireland a few years ago, one of his biggest hands was busting forward from half-back.
Exactly, yeah.
And like, that's a different type of centre-half-back, than, especially in the modern game. Usually now, like, maybe the centre-half-back would go forward a lot more through the middle when there wasn't so much blanket defences or whatever to overcome. Whereas now it's usually your wing-back are going up and down, and your centre-half-back is just holding there in an almost sweeper role because the centre half forwards drop deep as well that he's marking, and he's just holding that position.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know if that's using Paul Murphy Messer. Maybe they will be able to utilise him.
But it'll be interesting to see how he gets on, because
he'll have to time that.
Kerry's of such a strange situation. It's like, I don't think they've had a number six that's come in as a number six since like Ambrose O'Donovan or someone. You know, it's like they keep developing these guys from, like, it's a problem position going back for Tipperary have had the same for a long time in hurling, like Ronan Martyr's obviously there as well, but like going back for generations, it's funny how that happens. They just can't get the number six. And like Seamus Moynihan came in, did a great job, but he wasn't there originally. Mike McCarthy, I'm missing a few others, like, you know, Owen Brosnan, just lads that are just wheeled in there because they need to fill the position. But I think Mark's right. I think that you kind of lose what Paul Murphy gives you because you're trying to fill a hole.
But so, and while I agree with you, I think Paul Murphy's a really good tagger as well, as somebody who kind of would mark his man out of it. And then on that team, it's funny you said Mike McCarthy and Owen Brosnan, because what they did so well for Kerry was time that run, that when they did get forward, it was nearly always effective. And Paul Murphy is surely somebody else that can do that as well. I think with Paul Murphy playing centre back, there's a lovely balance. Him there, you've got these like savage, hard-working half forwards like Michal Burns, Darren Moynihan, Stephen O'Brien, and then the only thing is how you fit in to whoever comes back in a wing back. Because if it's going to be White and Morley, the two of them are mad keen for road. Like, they get forward consistently, which means Paul Murphy will never get forward. But I still think he's a good enough tagger. I actually think that Kerry are moving towards a really nice balance that makes them. It would be interesting to see how they go against Mayo at the weekend, because either A, they'll get that right, somebody will hold the centre, or B, it'll be a lottery, a total shootout, just teams running from everywhere, which would be a much preferable option from a viewer, but maybe not necessarily for a Kerry man.
There is an aspect as well, that prospect of Murphy, if he's able to get that and you're able to get him into it, he's much more effective. Like, your half-back that's going bursting forward is much more effective if they're able to get them through the middle and create space for them to do that, rather than going up the wing where they can't,
that's a great
sometimes
point,
they can't
yeah.
actually shoot even if they get opposite out too far.
Yeah. Can I make a final point on that match? This match, I don't want to see the gold jersey up against that bloody black jersey, the blue Mayo
it's insanity,
one as well.
Yeah.
That is a clash of awful. Can one team wear their home jersey and one wear their away?
Yeah,
I don't. Want to, it doesn't look like, you know. There's you should be able to recognize at least one of the teams playing. I watched that match of the league and I was just annoyed the whole time. I really was. It just bugged me, I have to say.
Yeah, it's a nonsense. I don't understand this whole thing. I was trying to explain it the weekend to someone where I was like, this was like, why are both teams changing their jerseys? It was the Cavan Dublin game, and then you also had it in the Armagh playing Cork. There was a few different games about the weekend.
Yeah, the All Ireland final in 2010 they did it as well. Cork wore white, downward gold, and it's just like
last year, the worst example of it last year, Kildare against Monaghan, when Kildare had to change to turquoise and Monaghan had to change to all blue. And it's like, what are you, for the love of God, playing white?
Oh, God.
Just on the theme of Mayo men and men mad for road, Stephen McMenamin spoke about the influence Stephen Rochford has had on Donegal, which is a narrative that it's unbelievable to think that after Rochford is finally in there and he's totally floating under the radar coaching Donegal. But as what was interesting about this discussion is that Rochford isn't necessarily having that much of an influence on their tactics. It's more standards. You know, he's not setting out a game plan that they're going to play the Cara Finn or the Mayo way. That, you know, there's not a huge amount of variance there. This has been something that's planned before him. But what he will influence is kind of the don't drop balls, this kind of thing in training. So it's maybe like a Stephen Rochford, the disciplinarian.
Having Stephen on there is good. Like, he brings, I think he brings in another professional level again. Like, but I don't think tactics have changed too much, really. It's brilliant to have his pedigree in there, having a man coaching us. Like, it's different from last year's, but I think it's a real bonus. We've kind of been building our tactics on the last 2 years, maybe 3 years, like, and we are tweaking it. There's always flaws, and you can always get better. But I'm not saying that since he's come in, that's changed completely. I think we're just building every year to try and get better and better and to compete with the best teams in the country.
You say we've brought in like a level of professionalism. Where have you noticed that specifically?
I just think in training, like training's been better having him in there. He's more, his technique, his ball skills, your kicking, your hand passing, everything has to be better with him. Like, it's not good enough to just go to training, turn up. He wants you to be performing the best you can, and I think he gets the best out of everyone at training.
And you see that making a difference this year?
Oh, 100%, it is definitely making a difference. Like, are you making your ball handling skills, your kick passing, your hand passing, everything? He focuses on something different every week. Kickouts, he's putting massive effort onto them. Attacking football, we're trying to improve on our attacking every training, like, and he brings out the best in it. That's why I think he brings real professionalism. He's on the field, he's just focusing on training us. And he brings a lot of new drills, a lot of new tactics to training, like, and it's good in a way that maybe he doesn't have a lot as many responsibilities. Like, you have the likes of Carroll Lacey, he more focused on defenders, Rochford's overall kind of team, and then Gary Boyle's attacking. Like, so Rochford just is fully committed to just training and preparing a good training session for them all. It's good to see Stephen Rochford, and he sees he's coming in new, and he sees everyone on the same page and going training wise. Like, they pick their team on who's training well, and Stephen Rochford would see no big names in Donegal. Like, he knows everyone on the same sheet, so I think it's good having him in there. He doesn't know at the start, he knew no one, but it's good to get him in there now. Like, and he's really his room bonus. Trying to find our weaknesses, but this year he's probably trying to get the strengths out of us. But it's good to see him coming from Mayo. Like, he's not coming from Mayo for no reason. Like, he definitely sees something in us, and I think all of us have bought into him too. Like, we see something in him, definitely. Like, he travels up from Mayo 3 days a week, and he mightn't be getting home till all hours of the evening. Like, so he's definitely seeing something in us. Hopefully he'll go on and win an All-Ireland. That's the main goal, to be fair. And I think he's really bought into it, and everyone's bought into his tactics.
That's Donegal flyer Stephen McMenamin there. Rochford is an interesting one, because he, I think, was probably unfairly treated as overrated because of me. He's been underrated because of one or two controversial calls, despite the fact that he got Mayo closest of anyone to beating probably the best team of all time.
He definitely has it. And, like, you wonder, like, it's such a strange balance with Donegal in terms of, like, someone coming straight away from one of the biggest contenders for the All-Ireland. It's such a strange, I mean, it'd be strange, or it'd be interesting to see how it works out and the influence, like, how much leeway Declan Bonner as well gives Rochford in terms of controlling that team.
I was going to say that. It's a sign, I think it's a really good sign for Declan Bonner as a manager that he'd bring in someone so high profile. Just, it's a sign that his ego isn't going to be a factor in any way, and he just wants to see, look, let's see what we can bring. But I'm more interested in the fact that he's not probably bringing the
a tactical
what
influence
we would have associated with Stephen Rochford.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess it's really, really hard for us then to determine. I mean, it's a lot of time it is, but it's really hard to determine exactly what sort of influence he has when, if it is successful or even if it isn't. Like, the, it's the same thing with somebody like Caroline Currier, who's just left, the Limerick psychologist has just left that setup. It's been confirmed this week. It sounds like John Colley didn't necessarily want her to leave, maybe reading between the lines there. But to what extent are you going to give her credit for the work she did with Limerick last year? You don't really know, but you just know that you can only go on somebody like what someone Stephen tells you or what they tell you, which is that they're completely highly regarded.
A case of daylight robbery. Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful. Well,
this is outrageous.
That
actually
is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
The decision.
Oh, that's disgraceful.
This is all wrong. This is all wrong.
Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
You can read all those interviews up on site. Shane McEntee is already there. Steve McMiniman should be there, depending on what time you listen to this. And Stephen Rochford will be there on Saturday. You can also listen to them in our new feed, Mark.
Yeah, like we were saying last week, we've got a GA on balls.ie feed for the GA diehard. So this is obviously, you're probably listening to this on the balls.ie podcast feed, which is our main podcast feed. But if you want more GA content, if this isn't enough for you, you can also subscribe to GA on balls.ie. You can do the same for rugby. We've got a rugby show that you lads do every week, obviously. But if there are more rugby interviews that aren't part of the podcast or more feature-length interviews, they're all going to be up on the rugby on balls.ie feed. And the other good news is that we're on Spotify for all of these. So if you're listening to this, whether it be the balls.ie podcast feed or the GA or rugby one, I don't know why you'd be listening to this on the rugby one, but they're all on Spotify now. We're everywhere, every good podcast app. And if you find a podcast app that we're not on, get in touch with the gaffer at balls.ie and we will get on to them and sort that shit out.
Speaking of getting in touch, Mark Farley had a suggestion at the weekend. He reckons that there is a breed of underrated Gaelic footballers. So starting with maybe your own example.
Yeah.
What you're talking about is players, I think, who are unheralded. So that maybe not necessarily.
Yeah, this is one that's going to be difficult for you to comprehend, Morris, because it's more for the likes of myself or Mick, who are GAA fans in the way that I'd say most people are GAA fans. We watch games, we'll forget things, we'll call people different names, we'll not be sure whether the Coen brothers are actually brothers. but you know everybody, so it's kind of lost a little bit on you. But these are players that are like stalwarts in their own county, but fair-weathered fans and neutrals may not have even heard of them. So my example was Marty Riley for Cavan, former Burnley player. We talked about him last week on the podcast, yeah, about his brilliant ability to catch kickouts while running at full speed in the opposite direction. He also has an amazing ability, which is Cavan's best, has been for many a year now, Cavan's best goal-scoring tactic, which is accidentally drop a shot for a point short and have Marty come in and flick the ball into the net in front of the goalkeeper, which he did against Roscommon, he did it against Galway, I think, earlier on in the league, and it got free out inexplicably. And he did it against Dublin at the weekend, got a goal from it, and almost did it a second time in the second half. He's been a brilliant player for Cavan all through. I'd say he's been Cavan's most consistent player since the Highland era.
Cavan.
Look, I'm just.
It doesn't have to be just Cavan players.
I think a stalwart in the county that we might not know from outside is one part of it. There's also the sort of the possible player within, like a Donegal or a Mayo or something like that, that maybe we don't recognise.
Yeah, you know the
what
name
they offer to the team. You know, and Kevin McLaughlin came up when we talked about this originally, but I think he's somebody that's acknowledged as being underrated. He's like the overrated, underrated player. You know what I mean? People know what we hear a lot of stories about what Kevin McLaughlin offers to the team. Another player who's getting old on the Mayo team, by the way. Now that I think about it, that is a really old team.
There's a few we put out on.
But there's other guys that like do a serious job that the fans that go to see them every week will tell you just what a player they are. Like,
there's Lauren Gilfoyle had a great suggestion on Twitter when we put it out, which was David Tuberty from speaking of, we've spoken with Cavan now, we can talk about Clare.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
But he's a perfect example, because when neutrals think of Clare, they go, oh yeah, Gary Brennan and Clare. Where it's like, well, Tuberty is right there, right up behind him. And you were saying at the weekend, it was like the 2 points that...
The very end, yeah. Gary Brennan and Dave Tuberty saving Clare. Just two stalwarts once again.
Exactly. Someone else was suggesting Donald Keoghan from Meath, which is another great example.
And I think that's nearly a better suggestion, because they're the players like maybe this time last year I kept talking about Graham Brody, but everybody else eventually realized, oh, Graham Brody is class, yeah. And he got nominated for an All-Star. Just trying to get in before that, somebody like Donal Keown, who, you know, based on this league, is in the top 10 players in the country. There's no doubt about that. Somebody like Johnny Heaney from Galway, who again I think is set for a stormer this year, yeah. Or maybe even Anthony O'Leary again going back to Galway. So it doesn't necessarily have to be just this stalwart. It can also be somebody outside of that bracket. Finally,
I have one more thing to get off my chest. Right, I've had a lot of this seems to be the things Mark needs to get off his chest around in the podcast. But there's a big situation after development today. Now, I don't have all the facts. In fact, I have very little of the facts. But that's not going to let I'm not going to let that get in the way of a rant here. MEPs have voted to abolish daylight savings time, or something to that. Something's happened today. I think that was it. I was told this as I was just walking into the podcast studio from 2020. Now, this has been in the pipeline for a long time. Sean Kelly, former president of the GAA, has one of those driving forces actually behind it in the EU Parliament. The last time I checked it, countries are going to have their own say in terms of they could decide whether they stick with summertime or wintertime. Now, I'm worried that we end up with wintertime because it will be a disaster for GAA players everywhere. It affects the GAA, the club GAA player, more than it affects anyone in the EU. And I want to know who is representing the club GAA player in Europe. Is it Sean Kelly?
Former president of the GAA.
Is it Mick Flanagan?
This is typical. Top table doesn't care about the club game.
So your problem is that we'll have to play games an hour earlier, is it?
So if we stick with winter time,
yeah,
it would mean that it'll be dark at 9:30, right? Rather than 10:30 in the summer. Which means that all those summer games, midweek games that are played at 8 o'clock, or the midweek training sessions that are on at 8 o'clock, but at least you could do training under floodlights maybe, but the midweek games will have to be brought forward to 7 o'clock. Now, for lads coming down from Dublin to the country, that's a complete and utter disaster. So that is why I am forming a petition. I'm going to put it up on site. GAA podcast listeners against wintertime. And I want people who are in support of this cause to sign the petition.
Remember,
what about early morning training in the winter?
I was about to say that.
It's going to be dark for that now.
Do you remember, Mark, last year on the podcast, we did a debate in the podcast last year about eating your dinner before going up to watch the league final. I said that the day Cavan and Galway were playing in Croker, I said you should eat it after, and you said no, you do it before. There's an argument made that that it's going to be, you know, lighter earlier in the day, we start playing games in the morning, and then you go off to work.
Here's the thing.
You go off to work. So
it's going to be bright from about 3:30 in the morning.
That's what I'm saying. I don't have a huge, like, you know, dog in the fight when it comes to the GAA games. I do understand that, like, you know, there's something nice traditional kind of Wednesday night 8 o'clock throw in with the midgies biting the arse off you. It's a good GAA tradition, but at the same time, whatever, take it or leave it.
Midgies are going to be eating children coming home from school. Yeah. But anyway,
what I don't understand about the whole thing is that if we abandon summertime and go wintertime, it's going to be getting bright at like 3 o'clock in the morning before you're home from the pub, and then it's going to be getting dark at 9 o'clock. What's wrong with the other way? Now, the other way, what we'd have is it stays bright a little bit later in the winter, so you'd be getting home from work or school or whatever when it's still bright, and you go to work in the dark, which you kind of do anyway. It just gets dark an hour later when you're kind of already on the way in, and there's street lights these days.
There's every
don't need it at 3 o'clock in the morning. We need it at 10 o'clock at night.
This happened. What happened was I read this a couple of years ago and did one of those things where I got really angry that we were bringing back in wintertime, despite the fact that there was no suggestion that we were. But I just assumed that it'll suit the bigwigs in Europe to go with wintertime. And Ireland, just little old Ireland, it'll go with whatever they want rather than what would benefit ourselves. Also, can we talk about the fact that the EU are abolishing daylight savings. There's no suggestion that the UK are going to do that. So what's going to happen for games up and down up the north? Like,
well, we're going to have a time zone difference as well as a border.
Swan and Barrow's pitch in Cavan, half of it's in the north, half of it's in Cavan. If you're going to go to one other end of the field, you're going to have to go through customs and the time zone change. The game will be over at one end of the field and it won't have even started yet at the other.
It's the only podcast in the world that doesn't give a shit about defensive hurling, but gets outraged at the idea of daylight saving. We have to move on. Guess the spreads, lads. Mark is right. Guess the spreads. Mick, you're the reigning champion here. It's an unbelievable weekend, by the way.
Am I the reigning champion? Jesus, that's good to know.
Well, we didn't play last week because of only the two of us.
The two-man weave.
Mark, you're up first here. Derry Leitrim, guess the spread.
Derry minus three.
I'll go minus four.
It's minus three. Ooh.
Yes, 2-0.
2-0. Mick, we're going off to hurling Limerick Waterford.
Limerick minus two.
Limerick minus... I think it is Limerick minus two. I'm going to say Limerick minus three for the sake of it.
To all. Limerick minus two.
Yeah.
Kerry Mayo.
Kerry minus one.
Kerry minus two. It'll be minus one.
It's Kerry minus two.
Yes!
I was surprised by that.
4-2, so am I. I thought it'd be minus one.
We'll go to the Division 3 game, which is Loud Westmeath.
Westmeath minus one.
Westmeath minus two.
It's Westmeath minus one.
He should have went first. No. I said that. I thought
oh, yeah. That's fair, actually.
For all.
Ah, that's bollocks, obviously. As usual. Corrupt quiz master over here.
How was that my fault?
Crooked Boris Brosnan. Because you asked him the wrong question.
How?
You were supposed to ask me.
I just put it out in the room, lads. It's whoever answers.
Right, come on. I'm first this time, so.
Donegal. Donegal Mead.
Donegal minus one.
Donegal minus two.
Donegal minus two is spot on.
6-4. Jeez, we're getting good at this. We've got every one of us going to go.
Right? Everything is minus two.
Which
right.
I thought of them minus two. Westmead was minus three. The rest of them were all minus two.
That's it. Please subscribe and rate the podcast. We'll chat to you next week. Good luck.